We are Radio Catskill.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government, is here, taking a look back at the legislature's 2024 accomplishments and welcoming new employees in the new year, Public Health Director Dr. Jesse Moore and the new RSVP Coordinator, Monica Russa. New year and new laws, New York State has banned PFAS, or forever chemicals, in apparel. We'll tell you more about the ban of these chemicals known for making clothes stain-resistant, water-repellent, and durable, but also that pose serious health risks. Plus, the Liberty Public Library has a new year with celebrates the new year with crafts, writing, movies, and more. And the interior design trends that will define decorating in 2025. We'll find out how you can take your home to the next level in the new year. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Kuhlman. The FBI now says the man believed to have driven into crowds of people in New Orleans early on New Year's Day acted alone. 14 people were killed in the incident and dozens of other people were injured. Authorities say the Bourbon Street area is now safe for people to return. From member station WWNO, Hallie Parker has more.
Less than 2 days after the attack, live music sounded from local bars and clubs, and tourists quickly started to return. More police are stationed throughout the city's historic French Quarter after officials promised to heighten security. For some, the reopening was more somber. New Orleans native Melvin Jackson Jr. knew one of the 14 victims.
Still devastating. It's like it's still surreal to have terrorism happen here in little old New Orleans.
He walked down to Bourbon Street to pay his respects. For NPR News, I'm Hallie Parker in New Orleans.
The White House says President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden will travel to New Orleans on Monday. They are to grieve with families and community members affected by the attack on New Year's Day. The U.S. Surgeon General has released a new advisory today on alcohol use and the risk of cancer. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy says alcohol is responsible for about 100,000 cases of cancer every year in the U.S. and 20,000 cancer deaths.
Alcohol is the third leading preventable cause of cancer behind tobacco and obesity. And in this advisory, what I lay out is the causal link between alcohol and cancer and the fact that it's now linked to seven types of cancer: breast, colorectal cancer, mouth, throat, voice box or laryngeal cancer, esophageal, and liver cancer.
He spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. The Surgeon General says that increased alcohol consumption increases a person's risk of cancer. Stocks opened higher this morning as President Biden formally blocked the sale of U.S. steel to a Japanese company. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 108 points in early trading.
Stock in U.S. steel fell as word came that President Biden would make good on his pledge to halt the more than $14 billion sale of the company to Nippon Steel. Biden said in a statement, "It's important for national security to maintain a domestically owned and operated steel industry." The move represents a victory for the United Steelworkers Union, which had also opposed the takeover. Critics say the president's move could backfire, though. Nippon Steel had promised to invest billions of dollars to modernize U.S. Steel's blast furnaces in Pennsylvania and Indiana. Without that investment, the company has said it may shift its focus to non-union steel plants elsewhere in the country, jeopardizing thousands of union jobs. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up 114 points. This is NPR. News reports say the Union for Dock Workers on the U.S. East and Gulf Coasts will resume contract talks Tuesday with operators of ports and ocean carriers. The union went on strike last year for 3 days. Part of the issue was resolved with a wage hike of 62% over 6 years. But both sides are at odds over automation. If there's no agreement, it's possible another strike could start January 15th. Long-distance migrations can take a toll on animals. NPR's Jonathan Lambert reports on new research showing some bats time their migrations to get a lift from passing storms.
Studying bat migration is tricky since bats are small and fly only at night. A new study published in Science used special trackers, essentially tiny bat backpacks, that connect to wireless networks. The trackers allowed researchers to watch the migrations of a species called the noctual bat across Central Europe and measure climate data. The study found that bats time their departure to leave just before a storm comes through. Surfing storm tailwinds can make the bat's migration, which can span hundreds of miles, a little bit easier. Jonathan Lambert, NPR News.
A data research company says it checked to see which airlines had the best record last year for on-time arrivals. Cirium is an aviation data provider. It says Aeromexico had the world's best record last year with on-time arrivals of nearly 87%. The worst-ranked carriers were Canada's WestJet, Air Canada, and Frontier Airlines. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One with the Capital One Quicksilver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at RWJF.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, it's Friday, and we are joined in the new year, Friday, January 3rd, by Mr. Dan Hoost, as we are every Friday. Thanks for coming back this year.
My pleasure. So I'm just glad I can be back for 2025. The longer you live, the more it's like, I didn't really imagine myself living in 2025.
The future.
But yeah. Well, Dan, I did to a certain degree. You know, when you're a kid, you think about, what's it going to be like when you're 16 and can drive, or 18 and can vote, or 21 and can drink, or 30 and you wonder if you'll have a family or something. But this year I'm approaching the big 50, and I'm just like, I didn't think this far ahead. Maybe I should have.
Maybe we should every Friday offer some tips for you after. We'll do this like planning thing. We'll get some experts in after your segment. Let's talk about it.
Financial experts. That's who I should be talking to.
Dan, of course, is the communications director for the Sullivan County government. There's no legislature this week because of the new year. Also, there's no legislature meeting next Thursday because January 9th has been declared a national day of mourning to honor President Jimmy Carter, who died on Sunday.
Right. And people like my mother, who might be listening to this, be like, another day off for government. But it's actually built into our labor contracts that if there's a national day of mourning, the staff get it off. So, and listen, I really don't have an issue with that. It doesn't happen every year. President Carter has quite a legacy that we should reflect upon. So January 9th, which is next Thursday, all county offices will be closed. That includes our transfer stations. So if you're going to be taking some trash to the stations, you'll have to pick another day other than the 9th. The only facilities that will be open are the ones that are always open: 911, jail, sheriff's office, the care center, maybe our DPW workers if we get bad weather that day. So these folks are great. We actually, I saw the other day, the sheriff posted something on Facebook about visiting with his jail deputy on New Year's Eve, actually at midnight when it changed to New Year's Day, just to say thank you to them for the work that they do when the rest of us were partying or asleep.
Mm-hmm. They're out there watching. Mm-hmm. And just a programming note about President Carter, Radio Catskill will broadcast NPR special coverage of two key upcoming events marking the life and death of former President Carter. On Tuesday, we'll have special coverage of the service in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol, where Carter's remains will lie in state. That starts around 2:30. And then Thursday, as we mentioned, is a national day of mourning. We'll have special NPR coverage of the state funeral service at the Washington National Cathedral. That begins at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday the 9th. And also, if you haven't had a chance, go to WJFFradio.org and take a listen to Judy Van Putt, who, along with her husband Ed, were members of the community back in 1984, mm-hmm. when President Carter and First Lady Rosalynn Carter visited here. He and they were avid fly fishermen.
Yes.
They loved to fly fish. And this was a historic visit, and Judy had her memories of that. It's another great honor and memory of former President Carter.
A little bit of trivia with that, too. I actually sat in the same seat that Carter sat in. There used to be a chair. I'm sure somebody's kept it. There was it was called Lisa's Autumn Inn, which was in Calicoon, right near the Western. And that was where President Carter came to eat.
Uh-huh.
I think because of my former boss, Fred Stabbert, his father was head of the Democratic Party at the time in the county. And I think he got him to come to Calicoon. And they actually created an embossed little plaque that was in the chair. You could sit in the chair that Jimmy Carter sat in.
And I think they never cashed the check that they used to pay for the meal. I think Judy mentions that in the story, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, anyway,
fascinating.
County offices closed on January 9th to the National Day of Mourning for former President Carter. The next meeting's coming up on January 16th then.
Right, the following Thursday. Yes.
So you've got some new folks joining the government for the new year. A new public health director, Dr. Jessie Moore. What can you tell us about Dr. Moore?
Yeah, this is really cool. She has a doctorate in public health. Also, of course, a master's in public health, which I think is a prerequisite to get the doctorate. But beyond just her vast education, she also has great experience with the region. She lives just over the border in Orange County in the Middletown area, but her most recent job for the past year and a half has been the physician liaison for Garnet Health, which of course runs our local hospitals and urgent care. She has been the one to deal with the physicians and the nurse practitioners for the Garnet Health system, so she understands our health landscape very well, both what our strengths and weaknesses are. So she comes, unlike somebody who might come from somewhere else in the country, she comes with a great deal of on-the-ground experience already for not just Sullivan County, but Orange County, Ulster County. That regional knowledge, I think, is going to be invaluable. So we're looking forward to having her on the team. Well, she actually is already on the team. She just started this past Monday. I'm sure she's still feeling like she's getting her feet underneath her, but she will be running a staff of, I think, about 60 folks, our public health department, which is invested with a lot of authority and responsibility, from rabies to pandemic response to monitoring camps during the summer for any potential outbreaks of contagious diseases. They have a very robust outreach program. Their epidemiology, they deal with children, adults, seniors, and I think she's going to be able to hit the ground running and really add to that department in a way that we need to continue our hopefully ongoing upward rise in our health rankings. And then, of course, we also have a new RSVP coordinator.
And remind folks what RSVP is and does.
Retired Senior Volunteer Program. I was attempted to quiz you to see if you were going to get it right.
No, I don't.
What is
Respondez, s'il vous plaît.
Right. Isn't that what it is? Yes. Or is it receipt, s'il vous plaît? No, it's respondez, s'il vous plaît, right?
I thought it was respondez.
Yeah, I know you're going to look it up while I'm on here. Yeah. Anyway, I will talk about our new RSVP coordinator, Monica Ruzza. She is a Sullivan County native who really has, like Dr. Moore, an enthusiasm and passion for Sullivan County. She will be working with our retired and senior volunteer population, because you might be a senior, not retired. You might be retired and not a senior, or maybe you retired and a senior. Regardless, if you're over 55 and you're interested in volunteering, she's interested in talking to you about it, because she has got quite a stable, over 100 different volunteers, but she needs more who are working across Sullivan County. And this is the really interesting part, is you do not have to be somebody who is necessarily out and about. She has several homebound seniors who knit and crochet items that we need to give, like mittens and hats and scarves, to people who are in need in the community. So if you have an interest in volunteering, no matter what your ability or lack thereof, we probably can find a spot for you.
We've had a few RSVP folks that have helped us out here, too, which is great. So always a variety of opportunities through that department.
And we reimburse you for mileage, and we cover you with our liability insurance. So it's something that I look forward to doing once I get past 55, which is not that far away.
As we've learned.
Yes.
RSVP is an initialism derived from the French phrase répondez, s'il vous plaît, meaning please respond, literally respond if it pleases you, to require confirmation of an invitation. Side note, the initialism RSVP is no longer used much in France, where it's considered formal and old-fashioned.
Really? And we still use it all the time here in America.
We've got more ground to make up here. We also want to mention another employee development. Learned that Nancy Buck, the treasurer, is going to not be running again for her office. Explain what this process is. It's an elected office for treasurer in the county.
I don't know that she's formally announced her retirement, but there are already people who are formally announcing that they would like to run for her position. So I think we're as close to it as we
can. It's out there.
So, yeah, it is definitely out there. Nancy has been in our treasurer's office, goodness, for 20 years or more. I haven't looked up exactly, but she has also been the county treasurer for the past decade. She was the deputy under Ira Cohen. I'm sure a lot of people fondly remember Ira. He is unforgettable, but actually so is Nancy. And she has run that office with great professionalism. That has been shown in voters returning her to office several times over the years. But this will be her last year in that position. She will be retiring December 31st of 2025. And in this November, voters will have the chance to elect whoever is running and that they think is the best successor
for her. Part of the November election coming
yes
up. We're already talking about the November elections again.
Could be primary. I doubt it, but if there is a primary, that would probably be in June. But I think that at this point we're headed for just a regular general election in November for people to choose who is going to be her successor.
You should also note that she's award-winning Nancy Buck treasurer.
Oh, yes.
Right? She won a state-level award, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Her and her office win budget awards every single year. They've won them for her entire tenure in office. There's rarely a more professional person that you are going to find in charge of municipal finances. And after all, since it's our taxpayer money, don't we want that kind of person in charge?
We're speaking with Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday for an update on legislature news. No legislative meeting this week, as we mentioned, but a list of legislative accomplishments you have sent out for 2024. Are there a few things you want to highlight for folks?
The main thing that legislators are most proud of, even though it does come with a cost, which is why you'll probably see a modest tax increase this year in a county tax bill, is the EMS fly car system. Which every time I say it looking at you, I'm thinking the same thing you're thinking about.
I immediately go to the Batmobile. I literally, in my head, I'm like, that's what I think.
So, the fly car system is, of course, the four different quick response EMS vehicles that are patrolling the county 24/7 these days. It is a nearly $3 million program, so it's not cheap, but it has already had life-changing consequences. We have reduced the average response time throughout Sullivan County by 15 minutes. And as I always say when I talk about this, this is not any kind of slight or knock against our existing ambulance corps, which we could not live without. These fly cars, they do not transport. They are not in competition with our ambulance corps. They are here to support them because, as ambulance volunteers will tell you, sometimes it's nigh near impossible to get a crew together to get out there, and then it may take some time. Well, they're glad to know that these fly cars are out there taking care of the folks ahead of time while they get out there. But, of course, then eventually there may need to be a transport. Our fly cars aren't doing that. If there's any kind of billing, our fly car service is not doing it. You're already paying for it in your taxes. So this is to supplement, strengthen, and encourage more volunteerism in our ambulance corps, but also to recognize the reality that there was a gap and we're filling that.
And that was a big accomplishment. What are some other things that the legislators are highlighting or you're wanting to highlight there?
Well, I think in particular, the first thing I want to do is say you should look at this list because it's more extensive than you probably would know. There are people who have been doing things all over county government, and while I sort of give credit to the legislature for this, it takes an entire county to get some of this done. I'm actually trying to bring it up in front of me here, and we're just stalling on me.
Well, so, you've got accomplishments under, you know, listed out under infrastructure, public health, welfare, safety,
yep.
Taxes and finances, actually, adopting the 2025 budget, keeping the tax increase. There was a slight tax increase.
Yeah, but it's under the tax cap.
The cap. And, yep. But with also without cutting services or laying off employees, not creating any new debt.
Yep. That's a big one with the debt. We're not putting taxpayers in further debt because that's what it used to be done. And that hasn't been done in a while because we're doing well financially. Oh, another thing I do want to mention that is in that list. The broadband. We are going to be bringing broadband across Sullivan County, and the past legislature, but also this legislature, has made sure that that can come to fruition. It's going to be transformative for the digital landscape in Sullivan County because there are still people who are using dial-up or satellite, and I'm sure they would like to change to something more fiber-based, and it will be both wired and wireless.
Something else we've spoken about here before, construction on the new airport terminal in Sullivan County, using $18.5 million in state grants to create a new facility. What's the timeline for that? Will that be opening later this year?
Yes, it will be open this summer. We're under a deadline with the grant that we got because that $18.5 million is not coming from the county. That's coming from the state to make sure that we are finished by May. Which means I actually expect the governor may come down in June or thereabouts and actually do a formal ribbon cutting on the airport terminal because this is one of the biggest projects we've ever had, and it's mostly funded with state money.
And just to be clear to folks again, it's not for passenger use.
It's not a passenger terminal in the way we think about it. We're not bringing passenger service back to the airport. They tried that 50 years ago. It failed. The economics have not gotten better with that. What this is intended to do is to replace an aging terminal that's now been demolished, but also make the airport attractive as a business jet port, a place for business jets to come in and actually
– an alternative to the city and outside the city.
Yes, because we've got the room. And we've got lower prices than the airports do around the city, and we can make quite a bit of money. We've certainly increased our fuel sales, I think, by well over 200% in the past few years, just because we're positioning ourselves more to be that place where you can stop in and get aviation fuel. There will be a spot open to the public. There'll be a second floor restaurant with beautiful views of the runway. We're working on seeking out vendors now who can run that restaurant to be something that will be attractive to locals and also pilots who fly in. So the airport terminal is a big project. I also want to mention, I have it up now, that we paved, the Division of Public Works paved 33 miles of roads, chip sealed 37 miles more, that's sort of like partial pavement, repaired embankments, restriped roadways, and actually replaced, I believe there were two bridges that one included a dam, while another five underwent rehab work. And while that was part of the budget that the prior legislature enacted, this legislature oversaw that and is continuing that process in 2025. We have just about the same amount of road work and bridge work. And listen, we all depend upon those roads and bridges, but they don't just magically fix themselves. And legislators have to make sure that that happens. Of course, water resources that we have, we've talked about that here too. They are now starting a study on really getting to understand what our municipal water sources are and eventually what our natural water sources are, because we all know we have aquifers underneath us, but we don't know exactly where they are and how much capacity they have. There's we have a lot of development that's coming this way.
There's no comprehensive map.
No. And so we're putting that together. That's going to be a resource for decades to come.
Oversaw a record year of sales, mortgage, and room tax revenues collectively exceeding $100 million, and Sullivan County remains in the best financial shape ever, according to the county, free of fiscal stress, as ranked by the New York State Comptroller's Office, according to them. But, you know, with all these great achievements, there are still some challenges there. We've addressed some of these before, the housing, the unhoused. What are some of the other challenges that the legislature looks to tackle in the new year?
Well, housing is a twofold one. One is there you can be working and still not be able to afford housing in Sullivan County. And that's a stunning reality. But there's also, of course, the homeless issue, which has been growing as well. There's the health issue that we've talked about, where we need to increase our health rankings. There is the constant tension that has to be navigated between development and the rural pastoral nature of many parts of the county. That is something that will continue coming back to the legislature and our economic development agencies as well, is that there's the need to have development to increase the tax base, to not have our communities stagnate and lose more businesses than they gain, but also to preserve our beautiful spaces, our natural resources. And there's always a concern about sprawl and development, and not just commercial development, but residential development as well.
And another thing that the county is taking a look at is waste, trash, recycling, all of that, because the eventual closure of the Seneca Meadows landfill upstate, you've got to prepare for, as folks may or may not know, Sullivan County trucks its trash up there. That landfill is becoming to capacity. So what does the county do with its trash?
And that's a long-term issue. It will not be solved this year. There has been an interim measure done that's been a controversial one, where the tipping fees have been increased.
Yeah, I just want to clarify that for folks. The tipping fees that have increased are for commercial haulers. It's not for the residents who generally go and take their stuff to the
Your per bag fee hasn't. I mean, you would have to be bringing in quite a bit more trash than you could fit in your SUV or your sedan to be affected by the tipping fees if you bring your trash directly to our transfer stations. However, if you were a customer of one of the commercial haulers, you may see an increase in your bill, because we have increased, as of this week actually, the tipping fees for them, which tipping, I looked this up, I couldn't find, maybe you can, where tipping comes from. Some people say it's because the trucks tip their loads in. Other people say it's associated with the original meaning of the word, like tipping a waiter or a waitress, which doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, all that said is, we charge a fee based on the tonnage that these trucks bring in. We have scales that weigh them at several of our transfer stations. And last year it was $120 a ton. As of now, it's $136.50 a ton for municipal solid waste, which is your standard household waste. It is going to be $150 a ton starting July 1st for municipal solid waste, and also for what's called construction and demolition debris, when you're actually building or demolishing structures, which is different from your standard household garbage. But we accept that all. Part of that is because we received an 11% increase from the company that hauls the trash that we take in up to the Seneca Meadows landfill. And the other part is to cover a long-time cost, deficit, not cost overruns, but we never took in enough revenue to pay for the solid waste system as it is. So the rest of that, it's an overall 25% increase. So the 14% increase above and beyond the 11% is to cover those costs, so that we are basically net zero. We are not in the business of making a profit, but we also wanted to stop having taxpayers just continually subsidize the solid waste system. Users should be the one that is paying for it.
Tipping fees, I think, is French, and they don't use it anymore. I'm kidding.
Yeah. You couldn't find anything either, could you?
No.
I looked up about it. But I again think it's just because you bring in dump trucks and you tip them, and they put their load in whatever container it's going in.
Further investigation is needed. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about a few new routes coming to Move Sullivan and how you could recycle your Christmas tree. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, the problem of Alice Munro, a revered artist who chose to hide a terrible secret in her family.
Her writing makes you think about, like, art at what expense? Like, it felt so literal, like, you know, trading your daughter for art.
Rachel Aviv on Alice Munro, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, here with Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. There are some new Move Sullivan routes coming. One's actually started, I guess. What are these new routes coming in the new year?
Yes, one started today. It's actually not a new route, just reconfigured. And I'm not going to go into the details. They're just different changes and stops along our Route D, which goes from Monticello to Bloomingburg, stops at like Rock Hill and Wurtsboro. So if you're using that Route D, well, you probably already know now that it's changed, but movesullivan.com is where we have a listing of that. The only thing I've updated currently is Route D. In about a week, 2 weeks, January 13th, mm-hmm. I think it is, we are going to be updating our other routes with minor changes, but the biggest change will be that we will be adding an hour loop in both Monticello and Liberty. People have complained before that they just want to get across town, say in Liberty, and then sometimes they get on a bus, they have to go all the way to Monticello, back through Hurleyville and Loch Sheldrake. It's the full 2 hours that our loops are to just get across town. So we recognize that, have worked with Rolling V, our contractor, to create it so that if you just want to get from one side of Liberty to the other in a short amount of time, we're going to have a bus making a loop every hour in both downtown Liberty and downtown Monticello. And then in, I think, mid-February. We will see. It's still a little up in the air, but that's what I've been told. We will be debuting what I'm really excited about, Route E, our newest route, which will be serving from Liberty up through Parksville, Livingston Manor, Roscoe, down through Calicoon Center, Jeffersonville, Youngsville, and White Sulphur Springs.
That's an expansion there. Mm-hmm. Okay, and folks can recycle Christmas trees for free.
Yes. We actually take in those trees if you don't already have something to do with them. And if you do have a use for them, hey, enjoy. They're great for chipping or just as habitat for animals in your backyard. But if you don't want to deal with it, we'll take it off your hands for free. And then we will chip the trees to incorporate them as mulch in our county parks, landscaping, and beautification projects. I'm sorry, I can't tell you if you're like, was that my Christmas tree along that embankment there? It's mulched. Sorry, can't tell you that part. But just know that you've contributed to beautifying the county if you give us your Christmas tree.
We are in a deep freeze today and even a little colder for the weekend, and it looks like it's going to last through the week. Want to remind folks that the emergency heap benefits being offered, and also there are some warming centers here in the county mm-hmm. too.
Yep. HEAP, H-E-A-P stands for?
I think it's French.
Yeah, no, it's not. Home Energy Assistance Program.
See if you play.
See if you play, yeah, right. And so that is to assist people with a one-time payment of their heating fuel bill, whether it's oil or gas or wood chips or kerosene. All sorts of different things are covered with that. Many people don't realize they're eligible for that because you just sort of, in many ways, need to be on a limited income. Even if you have like stocks and mutual funds, I know some people who have that, but they actually don't have a lot of income that comes out from it. They're on a fixed income. They qualify for this kind of thing. That's the regular heat benefit. The emergency heat benefit, which started yesterday, you have to have already gotten your regular heat benefit. This is, okay, it's been a cold winter. You've run out of fuel from that first time benefit, and now you don't have anything to pay the next fuel bill. Well, that's where you've already done your application. Now you need to either call our HEAP office or come in person to it in Liberty. The benefit is not given automatically, so you have to ask for it, but we won't make you fill out the application all over again. You apply to our HEAP office either for regular or emergency HEAP. That's 845-807-0142, 807-0142. These are wonderful people who will be glad to help you in any way that they can. And there's also cooling benefits when we get into the summer months as well. There's even furnace repair benefits. So there's more to this than meets the eye. And I recommend that you, especially if you're in need of heat, that you give them a call. Now, if it's an emergency need where you're in a cold house and you have nowhere to go, give us a call, and we will set you up in a place or stop by one of our warming centers. They're open from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. every night through probably mid-April. There's one at St. John Street Episcopal Church on St. John Street in Monticello, and there's one at the Liberty United Methodist Church in North Main Street in Liberty, across from the Village Hall there. Again, though, that's just 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., so if you have an issue where you actually have a place to live but you just don't have any heat, I would start with calling our social services or our HEAP office, and we can find maybe temporary shelter for you. But if it's just a one-day or two-day thing, come on over to our warming centers. We'll be glad to take care of you.
Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Thank you, and Happy New Year.
To you as well, s'il vous plaît.
All right. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and there are some new laws in the new year. In New York, the state has banned the buying and selling of certain new apparel containing PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. From the New York Public News Network, WSKG's Natalie Abruzzo has more about the law that went into effect on January 1st.
The new apparel PFAS law is meant to protect consumers from exposure to hazardous chemicals, which have been linked to reproductive health issues, developmental delays in children, and some cancers. The bill passed in 2022, which gave businesses that sell products with PFAS chemicals in them time to understand the changes in the law and plan for the implementation this year. Types of clothing included in the bill are used for everyday, formal, and leisure wear for all ages, such as shirts, pants, dresses, as well as onesies, bibs, and diapers, to name a few on the list. Kate Donovan is the Northeast Director of Environmental Health and Senior Attorney with the National Resources Defense Council. She says exposure to PFAS can occur through skin contact.
PFAS in apparel in particular is certainly a concern because we certainly don't want to be wearing pieces of clothing with toxic chemicals on them.
Donovan's team and state officials will be working to pass additional PFAS consumer bills in 2025. They cover textiles, home goods, personal care, and hygiene products. Donovan says the use of PFAS is a life cycle problem from manufacturing to its disposal.
I think that's the main reason we are concerned about the use of PFAS in consumer products is that we really need to stop using PFAS. We have to turn the tap off to it.
New York will implement additional bans on PFAS in outdoor apparel over the next few years. California and Colorado have similar bans on PFAS in apparel and textiles that also went into effect at the beginning of the year. In Corning, I'm Natalie Abruzzo for the New York Public News Network.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, a new year and a new look for your home. We'll find out what's hot for home decor in 2025. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, this is DJ Chucks of Old School Sessions. Please join me and Selector Starkey at our new time, 8 p.m. to 12 a.m. Saturday night.
Old school, baby.
That's Old School Sessions right here on WJFF, 8 to midnight, Saturday night, only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The world of home design is ever-changing, but there are a few prevailing themes that home decor designers and experts say will be popular in 2025. We spoke to Mark McLaren of Sullivan Mercantile in Jeffersonville, New York, which specializes in custom textile decor and upholstery, about what will be trending in home decor in 2025.
Overall, all of the trends in 2025 kind of fall in under two umbrellas. One is, and really predominant, is a sense of creating a home that is a refuge from the world. The word nesting comes up a lot. The word cozy comes up a lot. That's one. And then the second really is sustainability, which is a very powerful driver for a lot of the decisions that are being made in the home.
Let's talk about nesting and being cozy. How can folks do this? What are some of the trends you're seeing in terms of like the cozy trend?
Sure. The big open space design, it's still very applicable, but it's getting cut down into smaller spaces. So think about kitchen nooks, a little reading corner, spaces that are single use and defined, you know, for one purpose, and giving some kind, a bit of enclosure and a bit of cutoff from the rest of the world. And it really mirrors what, you know, within the home, what people are looking for the home, that is getting cut off from kind of a turbulent world at this point and finding a place of rejuvenation and rest.
So it's creating a space within a space that's cozy.
Yes, exactly, as well. Exactly. And home builders are really finding that people are asking now, you know, after some years of the open design, are asking for, you know, smaller dedicated spaces like dining rooms or dens. And we see that in our work as well.
You know, the house has always been a home refuge kind of idea, but like within that, finding and giving a smaller place to go.
That's right. But over time, you know, the home goes through other trends as well. You know, we're seeing this time where the home is a refuge. At other periods, you know, before, let's say, the financial crisis of 2008, the aesthetic of the home was a trophy home. So we're, this sense of the home is a refuge, you know, has obviously, you know, obviously it's always been a refuge, but it's taking on much more prominence after the turmoil of the pandemic in particular.
So if it's not showy, what are some colors or textures or patterns that help drive this particular trend?
Sure. Well, let me start first on the sustainability piece. There's a strong resurgence in antiques. Now, over the, you know, in the recent past, mid-century, you know, has been prominent. And that's been pushed, you know, by Gen Z and millennials, which now make up 30% of the home decor spend in the U.S. right now. So a real sizable piece. But interest in sustainability and in upcycling and repurpose is driving a, interest in periods beyond mid-century. Wood tones, let's say, in the home are moving beyond blondes and kind of light tans and moving back toward richer, you know, browns and reds. So that's having an effect on the colors that are being used in the home.
Sort of earthier tones.
Yes, exactly. Furthermore, you know, with the sustainability, nature is impacting choices in design, and earth tones are now making a big return. Now, that's, I think, being driven from two different directions. One is that upcycle and the repurpose and the sense of reclaiming work from past periods. That work often tended to be in darker hues. So that is pushing the choice of color just by that process. But the influence of nature and the importance of nature, again, particularly after the pandemic, you know, kind of the getting a sense of rejuvenation and resource out of nature, that's affecting the choice of colors.
Yeah, so these two overarching trends of cozy nesting and then sustainability intertwine here when you look at the color choices or textures as well.
Yes, exactly.
What can folks do to kind of understand how to do this themselves?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. The move toward antiques, that's readily available in this area. You know, there's tons of antiques resources there.
What if you don't think you know a lot about antiques? Is there a way to kind of start small or kind of find things you like?
Sure. I mean, there's tag sales, you know, there's online auctions, all of those, you know, things. Online auctions, just be careful. They are very addictive. It's entertainment for me. But yes, absolutely. And then, you know, of course, we do work on refinishing that kind of work, as well as other companies here in the area like Liberty Fine Furnishings and Upholstery. But all of this is also easily done at home. You can learn anything, literally anything, on YouTube. So if you are, you know, if you have a particular piece that you're interested in refinishing or reupholstering, that's all available on YouTube. One tip, you could find something in an antique store, you know, or a tag sale, an heirloom. You could do a full refinish of it, you know, strip it, sand it, stain it, seal it. That's a bit time consuming, but absolutely doable. One thing that we use at the Atelier is a product called Restore a Finish, and we call it a wood refresh. This literally, in very little time, takes you about 65 or 70% of the way toward a full refinish. It's a very easy product. You know, you use it in a well-ventilated area, but you rub it on with a sponge, let it sit for 5 minutes. It dissolves the seal that's been there, either the lacquer or the veneer. it gives a quick restain. 5 minutes later, you wipe it off. We finish with a product called Feed and Wax, which is a liquid wax. And then boom, your piece looks brand new. It's really very simple to use and something that anyone in the home can do.
And do you think that there are any kind of trends that are on the way out?
On the way out. No, I mean, I think that things are being adjusted. For instance, you know, minimalism has obviously been important for a very long time. Minimalism is now being just, you know, slightly tweaked. So you'll see American colonial minimalist, or you'll see French country minimalist. It's kind of like that category is just being broadened just a little bit in the same way that the color palette is expanding. We're seeing a lot of movement toward pattern on pattern, texture on texture. Again, you know, nature influencing interior design. So, you know, woods and stones together, the textures of woods. We just did a reupholster of a mid-century chair that was actually found in a hallway in New York City. A kind of an iron base, a very bold wood accent. We reupholstered it with a kind of a silver velveteen, and just looks fantastic. So this was a found object. We did a quick refresh on the metal, quick refresh on the wood, and boom, the thing just pops. Just beautiful.
Sustainability in action.
Exactly, exactly.
Anything else that we should be aware of in terms of trends and design in 2025?
Again, I think, you know, a lot of these categories are just expanding and broadening a little bit. So wallpapers have done a comeback. We have a wonderful artist, Tricia Paoluccio. She is a pressed flower artist, and she's transferred a lot of her work to textiles and to wallpapers. Houseplants actually are making a big comeback.
Bringing nature back inside.
Exactly.
More
exactly.
Nature.
And nurturing and taking care of something, you know, in the home. 2/3 of the garden centers in the United States reported a 15% increase last year in the purchase of home plants, bringing nature back into the home, and just a general sense that nature is influencing our design. It's interesting. It's what you see can look reflective or of a retro 70s, 60s, 70s aesthetic. There's something to that. Each generation or each, you know, every few years, people look for, you know, kind of new inspiration. But much of this is being driven, I think, in the same way that it was driven in the 70s, a sense of a bit of a crisis, maybe in the environment, that kind of thing, is pulling us toward that look as well. So the earth, you know, bringing in earth tones, bringing in the influence of nature, wanting to kind of feel nature in the home. Again, to, you know, go back to what we started with, to create a rejuvenating kind of nest in the home. So it's interesting to watch. The trend is kind of being influenced from different directions.
Now that you mention it, and I think about it, back in the 70s growing up, mom had houseplants, macrame, and mushroom prints.
Exactly.
So, there you go. Mark exactly. McLaren is the principal at Sullivan Mercantile in Jeffersonville, New York. Textile decor for the home, business, and hospitality. You can find Sullivan Mercantile on Instagram and Facebook and online at sullivanmercantile.com. Mark, thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the new year, new events at the Liberty Public Library. This is Radio Chatskill.
NPR has special coverage marking the life and death of former President Jimmy Carter, and you can hear it on Radio Catskill. On Tuesday, it's a service in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol, where President Carter's remains will lie in state, Tuesday at 2:30 in the afternoon. Then Thursday, NPR has 2 hours of live anchored special coverage of Jimmy Carter's state funeral service at Washington National Cathedral, starting at 9:30 Thursday morning. Live coverage remembering former President Carter on Radio Catskill.
On this week's On the Media, how the map of the U.S. we grew up with has never shown us our true selves.
If you looked up at the end of 1945 and you saw a U.S. flag flying overhead, it was more likely that you were living in a colony or occupied zone than on the U.S. mainland.
Empire, on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, Tracy Gates is from the Liberty Public Library, and she's here to tell us a little bit more about the January events at the Liberty Public Library. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, and Happy New Year,
Happy
Tim.
Happy New Year to you. Or wait a minute. I thought that January 1st is the beginning of the new year, but in your Liberty Public Library newsletter, you cast doubt on that.
I do not cast doubt. I just we're the library, so we have to look into these things.
Yes, yes.
I write the newsletter as well for the Liberty Public Library, and I'm always looking for like just what is going on in the month that I'm writing about, and it's January, so it's the new year. But it's actually two new years because, the solar new year, which most of us are used to, we just celebrated the beginning of that, is on January 1st, of course, midnight. But there's also the lunar new year, and that follows a lot of cultures, including China and a lot of Middle Eastern countries, celebrate the new lunar year. New year when they follow the phases of the moon and the new moon. And so actually the other new year that we'll be celebrating in January is January 29th. And in the Chinese culture, actually, it's the this year will be the year of the snake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just felt that's important for everyone to know.
The Chinese character, the snake, is the Chinese character for the animal thought to represent a serpent emerging from the ground after hibernation, connoting the unveiling of something hidden or the start of a movement or something new.
Yes. Snakes can be beautiful creatures. So.
Yes. We must not fear them. We should look at them as being the intelligent, charming beings that they are.
Exactly. Thank you, Tim, for understanding.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit more about what some programs you have coming up at the library in Liberty. We want to make sure we mention, first off, to keep in the top of people's minds, if you got a lot of greeting cards and stuff over the holidays, you guys have a use for those because you're going to craft some new ones for the Valentine's coming.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we're getting a jump on Valentine's Day because I feel like Valentine's Day comes up in February and people are like quickly running to the store or, you know, maybe even emailing their Valentine's wishes. But so we are going to on, Saturday, January 25th, at 1 p.m., Cora of Cards by Cora is going to be coming and giving. She's one of our patrons, and she has been crafting these beautiful handmade cards for a long time now. And she came in and showed me some about a month ago. I'm like, oh my gosh, these are so beautiful. Could you actually show other people how to do this? And she's like, actually, I've already done that, but I'd love to do it for the library. And she's going to supply all the materials. So there'll be ink stamps and paper cutouts and watercolor and all sorts of things. And she'll provide the instruction. I've looked at some of her cards and they're really beautiful, but they're also really doable for anyone who is even a tiny bit crafty. And that's basically, I'm very just tiny crafty. So I always surprise myself. I'm like, oh, actually, I could make something that's really presentable.
Make your own card this Valentine's.
So this is about making your own card. It's kind of a work of art, and actually, people can come if they really don't feel like they want to make a Valentine's Day card. There's other options that they could do as well, but they should. This is something. It's going to be a small group workshop, about 10 people. So she'll really be there to help us, and they should sign up at libertypubliclibrary.org or call the library or stop in and just sign up. And again, it's on Saturday, the 25th at 1 p.m.
Liberty Public Library also has some great children's and teen events. Saturday Stories, Wednesday Story Time, Teen Game Day. And the one that really caught my eye was Origami for Teens. That's kind of cool. After school?
Yes, all of these, except for the Saturday, the one Saturday story we offer at the first Saturday of the month. That is after the Origami for Teens is after school Monday, January 27th. And that's a new one for us. Our children's and teen program, Laura, is going to be, she is very crafty. She's like major crafty as opposed to me. And she's always like, I see a bunch of origami on her desk right now. So she's been practicing everything and she'll have all the materials. And I always enjoyed doing origami when I was a teenager. In fact, I might try to like slip in and pretend that I'm a teenager just to learn.
You've got some great ongoing programs, of course, chair yoga, alchemy poets, senior swing, and a couple of programs devoted to writing, including the memoir writing workshop that you lead.
Yeah,
how's that going?
Oh my gosh, Tim, I love it. And the people I have right now, I have anywhere from like 8 to 12 people. It is something that people need to sign up for, but we have our regulars. In fact, just yesterday we met for our memoir writing. We do that once a month, and we also do a creative writing program once a month. It kind of slips, the memoir writing kind of slips sometimes into the creative writing, but the stories that are coming out of this workshop are just amazing. And everyone has their, people realize they have their own voice and they're developing it in class, and people are really supportive of each other. It's also, I find everyone just really enjoys getting together and getting to know each other. And memoir writing is a great way to get to know someone, because you're not making like this, you know, the little conversation. You're really getting into stories in your past. And, it's been so wonderful for me as well as for the people that come. And look, we welcome people to new writers
at
all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you also address folks that might have writer's block with a special writer's block workshop coming up next Thursday.
Yes. That actually, I'm at the library almost always on Thursdays and Fridays. And, that is actually, I started that because I felt like there were a number of people in our workshop that's like, oh, I'm always procrastinating, or there's a lot of distractions at home. I'm like, come to the library and I will help you. We have space for you to write. And if they have questions, they can, I'm usually there. They can come to me. We can chat a little bit about what they're working on. So it's a little bit more open than my workshops that we all sit around and we read and we discuss. But, people, and in fact, one of the writers in my workshop said, she signs up for it, every month, because then she knows she has to come and do it. And I thought, that's great. You know, whatever works. So.
Well, and you guys also, have some, movie matinees, coming up on, Friday, the 10th and the 24th at 1:00. A great time to go, you know, especially in this deep freeze time of year.
Yeah.
Spend a couple hours in the warmth. And also, if you're wanting to learn more about writing or other stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. Also, you guys, for 2025, have entered a new age. You now have an Instagram account. Congratulations.
Let me tell you, I was not the person that put that together. It was the children's and teen community person. So, and actually we have one teenager who is on staff there. And I think that she was the one that really helped us out.
It had to have been the teenager.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, we're on Instagram. Look for us. Liberty Public Library is our handle. So.
Yeah. And you know, have in your newsletter too, if folks sign up, they can learn like what happened last year and also help choose some books for your 2025 library book group and you know, meet some more folks, right?
Yeah, I think that's what libraries are, that people kind of don't think about until they come. I have to say, everyone who comes into the Liberty Public Library, and almost any library up here, but I'm just always hearing the people that come in for the first time, they kind of look around for a while, they wander around, and they're like, they come back and they're like, this is such a great space. and like, they're shocked that the library is a really lovely place to just not only to like go in and get a book, but just sit there, work on something, or come and, you know, go to a movie. But even better, just, you know, come to a workshop and do something that you can either bring home or enriches your life in some way and make new friends.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's more information at the website and on Instagram.
Yeah, on Instagram and Facebook. Yes, like us on both and sign up for a newsletter. I'm, you know, we mentioned at the beginning of this, I'm always looking for new things to learn about. And that newsletter, that you can sign up for at libertypubliclibrary.org.
Tracy Gates is the community program coordinator for the Liberty Public Library. Also, before we go, I want to mention that she's a contributor here at Radio Catskill. You missed it, she did a really great interview with Casey Kalabaugh. He was the guy that hiked on the long path, a long distance hiking trail from New York City to the Catskills. It was a 27-day adventure, and you had a great conversation with him. It's on our website, wjffradio.org. I encourage folks to check it out. You guys had a great conversation.
Oh my gosh, I learned so much, and I just had so much pleasure in learning about this hike up from New York City up to the Catskills, and look it up. It was fun to learn about.
The great thing, and we thank you, is that you can take our listeners on that hike without having to do it themselves.
Yeah, right.
Tracy Gates, thank you so much, and happy New Year.
Of course. See you next month.
That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. And this week, we are talking iconic dishes of the great Midwest with Chef Paul Fehrbach and burger scholar, yes, burger scholar, George Motes. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, a couple of flurries, breezy this afternoon and this evening. Today's high 28, a couple of snow showers overnight, low 19, and it's going to get cold for the next week or so. Tomorrow's high 23, low 17, a few snow showers around. Sunday's high 25, low of 22. It's 11 o'clock.